The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the...
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon. It is Tuesday, September 14th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community, followed up with 60 minutes of talk radio, Toker Talk Radio, involving you, dialing us at 971-533-7111 or Skype Radical Russ. We're coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, and joining me here in the studio, he's back and better than the ever, Ganja John.
I lost, I think it was 17 pounds last night.
17 pounds?
17 pounds, sir. 17 pounds of water came off of my body, and I walked in there with my pants all tight, and they were falling off my ass.
Ah, wow, that's a hell of a weight loss plan there.
Yeah, it's rough,
Well, Ganja John, of course, you did a mini dialysis on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and then we had the
I did a mini dialysis on Wednesday, too.
Yeah, so yeah, you'd only done a couple mini dialyses over the span of Normal conference.
Right.
So, yeah.
And we were partying till 1, 2 in the morning every night, waking up at 7 to go out to the conference. It was insane.
Yeah. John worked himself into sickness by Monday. Yeah. So if you were missing John yesterday, that's the reason why. But he's back today. And also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, our good friend and my half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, guys. Nice to have you back, Ganja John.
Thank you.
Carrie, are you still dealing with the pounding there at your home?
Yes. Since August of 2009, the answer is yes.
Oh, what a terrible... There they are. They're banging away out there in Astoria.
They actually somehow seem to be really quiet until right when the show starts.
Yeah,
so I will ask them to take a little break here right before I read my news segment.
All right. And speaking of the news, Carrie brings us our news right after our first break of the show. So what's in the headlines today?
Well, we have some more updates on those Michigan raids. We're also going to look at a press conference that was held yesterday in California by some people that are pro Prop 19 down there in California. And we're going to start out with a story from Amsterdam. You know, we love reporting on Amsterdam and stories from the Netherlands, so I'm going to tell you all about that as well.
All right, great stuff coming up right after our first break. And today's show, kind of a special lineup. Normally, we would have our daily Toker Tunes coming at 20 after the hour, but our music editor, Sarah Kant, out there in Boston, Massachusetts, she is still on maternity leave and the Boston Freedom Rallies this weekend, coincidentally. But since she's on maternity leave, I'm going to take that time to present to you a piece from the Normal National Conference that did not get aired live. We had a glitch with Stick'Em. It kind of kicked out right as I was beginning my presentation called The Box Canyon, Does Medical Marijuana Lead to Full Legalization or permanent medicalization. And it's a fairly long presentation. I'm going to present it to you here live. You'll hear the live audio from NormalCon on Saturday afternoon, and then I'll run the PowerPoint here on the screen so you can see what slides the folks were seeing. I'm also going to record this on StickAm, so we'll cross our fingers and hope the recording works okay so that we can have this one archived in the vault. So that will be the remainder of the show. It's a 36-minute presentation, so that will be the remainder of the show right after 20 after the hour. Then in our second hour, we'll talk all about NormalCon. We'll get Ganja John's reactions and talk to some of you out there who joined us out here in the Great Pacific Northwest. It's Normal Show Live. We're back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate. Fill in the dollar amount and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
Marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
A story out of the Netherlands concerning the strength of today's marijuana came out this week. The mayor of Leeuwarden, a city that sits to the north of Amsterdam, is looking to ban marijuana and hash in their town because the mayor believes that today's product is too strong. Mayor Ferd Kroon has submitted his proposal to the city council that would dictate the level of THC in any product sold in the coffee shops in his city. Coffee shops caught selling anything stronger would lose their license to operate. According to Mayor Kroon, the THC level in marijuana and hash in Dutch coffee shops has doubled over the past few years from 10% to around 20%. He hopes to keep that level right at 10% or lower. On Monday, the Volkskrant, a major Dutch newspaper, reported that in 2009, a sample was tested on hash purchased in a Leeuwarden coffee shop that tested at 64.8% THC, the highest level ever tested on a sample. The data is from the Trimbos Institute, although most samples tested far, far below that level. Mayor Kroon's proposal would have the Dutch police testing THC content, and if a shop is testing too high, they get a warning. The second offense is a penalty, and the third infraction would be the loss of the business license. Currently, Mayor Kroon is asking the federal government in the Netherlands to get involved with his crackdown on strong Dutch cannabis. The consensus from the coffee shop owners is that the mayor's intentions may be genuine, but his understanding of cannabis science is lacking. According to one shop owner, higher THC values are not any more addictive or detrimental to your health. The coffee shop owners also question the amount of money it would take to get the testing equipment for the police. So the old, it's not your father's Woodstock weed argument isn't just an American one.
Wow, weird thing to hear coming out of the Netherlands. But the one part missing in this story that's never mentioned by this magistrate or whoever it is that wants to control the potency is why. He's coming at this like, oh my God, the potency has doubled. And that's what, bad somehow? Right? Because if we look at alcohol, you know, if you're looking at the case of alcohol, there's a case to be made for regulating the potency of alcohol. And different states do it, you know, at different levels. In some states, you can get Everclear, which is this 95%, you know, alcohol, the most potent you can get. Other states, they'll restrict that. You can't get things over 100 proof or over 80 proof or whatever. They'll have different regulations for the sales of things that are wines and schnapps that are at a lower level than things that are bourbons and whiskeys that are at a higher level. And the reason why is because higher potencies of alcohol can be more damaging to you, can be more deadly to you because of the route of ingestion. You're drinking. And when you're drinking, it takes a while before you feel the effects. It takes, you know, anywhere 20, 40 minutes for your digestive system to process the alcohol. So you might have a shot and another shot and another shot, and then it might be a while before you realize that the third shot's where you should have stopped and you went and did six. Okay? Now, when it comes to cannabis, the same thing doesn't exist. When you're smoking cannabis or you're smoking hash or you're smoking hash oil, the effect is immediate. You'll know when you've had too much, Mr. Spoff. You'll stop smoking. You just won't keep doing it, right? And even if you did, what's the big harm? You fall asleep on the couch. Or you go take a walk, right? You relax, right? It's not dangerous. It's not toxic. So the potency is irrelevant. The only reason you'd want to restrict the potency might be from a business angle, right? Because I know if my customers are buying really potent weed, they're going to buy less of it. So maybe I restrict the potency so it's a little less potent. They got to buy more to get the same high. That's what I think's going on here.
We've been watching a story in Michigan that began 3 weeks ago with three medical marijuana businesses in Michigan being raided in Ferndale and Waterford. Yesterday, there was a protest of the raids outside of the Oakland County Sheriff's Department in Pontiac. Hundreds of protesters carried signs and chanted, "Stop arresting patients." Much of the protest was aimed at Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard for police brutality during the raids. Bouchard, watching from the building's lobby, told the media that the protesters were in the wrong place. He said they should be in the capital city in Michigan, Lansing, to ask for changes in the law that would make their activities legal. He added that many of the demonstrators were not there for medical marijuana, but to legalize marijuana. Six buses brought the protesters to the event from Port Huron and Oak Park. The event was organized by a newly formed statewide association of compassion clubs. Some of the attendees to the protest were patients from the raided compassion clubs who are being directly affected by the closure of the clubs. Many in the crowd said they would like to see an end to the paramilitary raids conducted by local police forces. Michael McShane, a 50-year-old AIDS patient who works full-time as an industrial machinery salesman, took the day off to join in the protest. He pointed out that the drug forfeiture laws in the state of Michigan have created a market for police to kick down their doors and seize cash, vehicles, and ultimately houses of those arrested. Meanwhile, Sheriff Bouchard, who headed those raids late last month, says it's up to the legislature to pass new laws to fill the gaps in the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act passed by voters in 2008. Until then, he sees that any dispensaries or compassion clubs in the state are against the law.
Oh, yeah. Once again, not understanding the intent of the people, the will of the voters when it comes to medical marijuana. It's a story that we've seen played out in California, in Oregon, in Colorado, where the officials just can't believe that the people really want marijuana to be quasi-legalized, at least in a medical sense, and that we want to have patients being able to use this fantastic herbal supplement. There was something in that story that Carrie mentioned, too, that really caught my ear, and that was when the sheriff or whoever it was that was disparaging the protests, saying, well, these aren't protests for medical marijuana, these are protests for legalization. You know, because that, again, it's that moral distinction that people make that, okay, well, if you're about to die, I suppose we can let you smoke a joint. But no, not if you're healthy. By God, that's evil. That's terrible. That's bad. It's something you're going to hear a whole lot about in my presentation that's coming up here right after the 20 after break about the Box Canyon medical marijuana, whether it leads to full legalization or to complete and permanent medicalization. So stay tuned for that. And this just, once again, illustrates it. The only possible way we can completely protect patients is to allow anyone and everyone above the age of 21 or 18, if that's your preference, to have the right to use cannabis. That's the only way. The medical marijuana laws that we have right now are nothing but a second-class citizenship for people who choose to use cannabis. They don't get treated like people that use Vicodin, Oxycontin, Percocet, Darvocet, Demerol, Xanax, Prozac. They don't get the same rights. Right? Because it's still an illegal drug. And they still have to maintain this division between the people who are healthy enough to imprison and the people who are sick enough to care for and not imprison because of their use of cannabis. We'll go all over that in my presentation. Stay tuned for that.
Yesterday morning, police, judges, and prosecutors who are backing Prop 19 held news conferences to talk about why they support the legalization of marijuana. Prop 19, the measure that will be voted in by Californians come November, would legalize cannabis use, distribution, and manufacture for adults. A featured speaker yesterday was Stephen Downing, a retired LAPD deputy chief of police, who says that he was in the LAPD when Nixon declared the war on drugs and was one of the generals in the front lines who helped implement the failed drug policies that are still in effect today. He voiced an opinion held by many in law enforcement that keeping marijuana illegal doesn't seem to prevent anyone from using it. Prohibition of cannabis results in billions of tax-free dollars funneled into the pockets of bloodthirsty drug cartels who control the illegal market. During the press conferences, it was pointed out how nonviolent marijuana-related arrest wastes law enforcement resources, and prohibition fuels violence around marijuana production and black market sales and creates a hypocrisy of the law in the eyes of young people. Although many retired law enforcement officers support Prop 19, active law enforcement groups and police chiefs are overwhelmingly opposed to the passage of Prop 19. Proposition 19's passage in November would decriminalize an estimated 60,000 drug arrests made in California each year, said former Orange County Superior Court Judge James Gray. Beat police would have more time to go after burglars, robbers, and those committing violent assaults, he said. On-the-job experience demonstrated the futility of trying to enforce laws prohibiting the possession and use of small amounts of cannabis. Gray said at the news conference, "I was a drug warrior until I saw what was happening in my own courtroom." Gray is a former federal prosecutor. The two news conferences were held simultaneously at Oakland City Hall and West Hollywood Park.
Good to have those press conferences going on. The word's got to get out about voting yes on Prop 19. We talked about it all this last week at the Normal National Conference. I got back to my emails and I discovered some links from the anti-Prop 19 crowd, the toss salad crowd, the stoners against legalization. J. Craig Canada called my word-for-word analysis of Prop 19 an exercise in cut-and-paste magical thinking. And then in his article went on for another 3,000 words of cut and pasting stuff from other people. So, you know, take the insults from where they come, I guess. But here's the latest couple of salvos they've launched here. One is that there's somehow a $600 per square foot tax that will be implemented on your 5x5 grow. Not true. It's nowhere in Prop 19. Another scare tactic. They're trying to say that part of the reason why people are supporting Prop 19 is because the big billionaires that support drug policy have stock in Monsanto, and Monsanto wants to make Terminator seeds, and they're going to take over the entire cannabis plant species and make Terminator seeds that only reproduce once, and then you'll have to buy all your marijuana seeds from Monsanto. Oh, man, the silly things that they come up with to try to oppose legalization, because it's just not good enough. You know, this is something else I point out in the presentation that's coming up here in just about 4 minutes, and that is that we have got an entrenched interest. We have got a status, an interest that is involved in wanting to preserve the status quo. I got's mine. They like what they got right now. They like Prop 215 just the way it is. They like having their jobs, you know, growing marijuana in their yard or in their closet. They like getting the untaxed, no paperwork trimming jobs, you know, just labor money under the table. They like being able to make money as a middleman, jacking up the price of an ounce of weed by dividing it into eighths and quarters and joints and so on. They like the situation they've got with the dispensaries where they can have a nice cushy job where they're working there and not having to worry about a whole lot of other things. Well, that's about to come to an end. It's time to stop treating people as criminals for using marijuana, and Prop 19 does that. The answer to any critic of Prop 19. If you're out there listening to me, Californians, the answer to any critic of Prop 19 is to start your sentence with, "I do not have a Prop 215 recommendation. Tell me why," and then ask your question. "I do not have a Prop 215 recommendation, so tell me why a 5x5 garden is a bad idea. I do not have a Prop 215 recommendation, so tell me why having an ounce on my person is a bad idea. I do not have a Prop 215 recommendation, so tell me why giving my city the option of possibly selling marijuana to me is a bad idea. Because every criticism they have has to do with Prop 215. The fear that somehow Prop 19 is going to make things worse than what they have with Prop 215 now. Never mind the fact that there's 10 to 20% of them who are marijuana smokers who got Prop 215, and the 80 to 90% of marijuana smokers who don't, the 66,000 who still got arrested or who still got prosecuted on misdemeanor marijuana charges in California last year, the 17,000 that got prosecuted on marijuana felonies last year. It's time to legalize for everyone.
In the meantime, I think it's time for us to take a break.
I think it's time to take a break. We got a new Gandalf from Starfish Designs. We'll break this in a little bit. We'll be right back with the presentation, The Box Canyon.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live. The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the marijuana smokers lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
Our next speaker should need no introduction to normal members and normal supporters. He's your national coordinator, national outreach coordinator. He is the host of the Daily Audio Stash on the Normal website, which is like the NPR of POT with better music. And as I recently discovered, he is a very versatile bass player, although I think he'll be speaking to you and not playing music. Mr. Russ Belleville.
Thank you, David. Well, this is going to be an interesting talk for me because I get to be Captain Buzzkill here. In fact, as I came upon doing this, I had to put myself in a certain mindset that I call myself, that I call WWKRD, What Would Karl Rove Do? And the idea here is that I come from political talk radio, I come from blogging and arguing and rhetoric. So my job today is to discuss a concept called the Box Canyon. And the idea here is whether or not – you know, focus there – whether or not medical marijuana is a path to full legalization or to permanent medicalization. And I wanted to do this by taking a look at trends in medical marijuana laws, in public opinion, in the stuff that I see coming out of the opposition, the stories I have to write every day trying to make these arguments. And sometimes with medical marijuana, I'm put in the mind of Chris Rock, the comedian. He had a routine where he talks about rap music and the misogynist lyrics in rap and some of the filthiness in rap. And he says, I love rap music, but I'm tired of defending it. And sometimes I feel that way with medical marijuana, especially when I get the stories across my desk of somebody being busted with a huge amount, or people that are getting cards on the tiniest of margins here, the slimmest of excuses. And before I get into all of this, I want to make sure that I give you a few disclaimers. They might be running out of batteries here. There we go. So a few disclaimers before we start. First of all, I'm a huge supporter of medical marijuana. I'm a registered caregiver in the state of Oregon. My wife is a patient. We moved from Idaho specifically because she was a patient. She suffers from migraines. I've had to take her to the hospital room 3-4 times. I've held her hair while she's puking. So yes, I understand medical marijuana and I completely believe in it. So a few disclaimers. First of all, of course, cannabis is an amazing medicine. If you haven't been sitting here today and learned that, then you haven't been listening. Of course. Of course, it's an amazing medicine, and nothing I'm arguing today is to take away from that. Also, of course, sick and disabled people should not be arrested for using cannabis. I don't think anybody should be arrested for using cannabis, but of course sick and disabled people should not be. So this is not to say we shouldn't fight for medical marijuana and we shouldn't go to protect those patients. Also, yesterday there was the alcohol prohibition. Richard Evans did his presentation, and he talked about the nomenclature of the wets and the dries in alcohol prohibition. I like to use the term want-tos and need-tos. I'm a want-to. I like to use marijuana. I want to use it. It's great. It makes my life great. But there are people who need to use it. L.V. Musica needs to use medical marijuana. Irv Rosenfeld needs to use medical marijuana. I completely understand that, so I'm not trying to take away from that either. And, of course, anyone who thinks that everyone should be able to use cannabis must first support the sick and disabled getting that right. We've always said that at Normal, that everybody deserves the right to use cannabis, but the sick and disabled need to be the first in line. Of course, absolutely. So with those disclaimers in mind, I'm going to give you a look at some of the trends that I've identified rhetorically and legally in medical marijuana, and to give you my dark predictions as to how it could turn out if we're not careful about how we fight for medical marijuana. So, what is this idea of the box canyon? We've said it a couple times. The idea is, could medical marijuana become detrimental to the overall cause of legalization? Are we going to end up in a permanent medicalization where that's as good as it gets? And I want to do this by looking at the framing of medical marijuana arguments. Obviously, we're not going to stop supporting medical marijuana and trying to fight for medical marijuana laws, but the way we argue for it can make a huge difference as to whether we end up in the medicalization or the legalization. And I'll show you the trends in medical marijuana legislation that lead me to believe that we are starting to end up in an equilibrium that's been decided by these various state laws and initiatives that could be locking us into permanent medicalization. And I'll show you rhetorically how the pendulum could swing back. I'm a child of the 80s. I turned 12 when Ronald Reagan was elected president of the United States. I grew up watching things like Love American Style, Love Boat, and I thought, oh boy, by the time I'm a teenager, it's going to be great. And then we got Reagan and AIDS and Just Say No. So I lived through the 80s, and I remember, you know, and we look back, and, you know, the joke about Keith Strop saying it's going to be legal by 1978. You see those opinion polls go from like 12% to 30% in the span of 6 years, and you can see why they thought it would be legal by the end of the 70s. And we saw how hard that pendulum swung back when the 80s hit. So we're going to take a look a little bit about that. And how can we then frame our arguments for medical marijuana with an eye toward full legalization? How can we frame that to give us our best advantage? So, a couple quotes to start us off. First of all, I'm a big fan of George Lakoff. He's a great thinker, wrote a book called Don't Think of an Elephant. And he says, all politics is moral. All politics have to do with morality. People vote for what is good. Even when they're voting for things that we might think are bad, in their mind, they're voting for it because it's good. And of course, the Otto von Bismarck quote, politics is the art of the possible. Let's look at the framing of medical marijuana arguments. First of all, medical marijuana was able to pass in 1996 in the Compassionate Use Act in California through a very simple moral scale. First of all, this is the way things had been in people's minds. We have cherishing our civil rights and civil liberties, which is something Americans cherish. But a greater good in a lot of people's minds was protecting society from the demon cannabis users, you know, going all the way back to Harry J. Anslinger and so on. And this weighed out in people's minds to say, oh, yeah, we love our civil liberties, but not when it comes to drugs, not when it comes to cannabis, right? We'll take away your Fourth and your Fifth Amendment and a couple other amendments while we're at it. And medical marijuana was able to pass because it changed the balance of this moral equation. And it made it so that there was a bigger good to vote for. Alleviating the suffering of the sick and dying outweighed protecting society from cannabis users.
But that morality still presents us with a lesser good of, well, we still have to protect society from cannabis users. And that's why we have such restrictions on these medical marijuana laws. Plant limits and who can be a caregiver and, oh, you can buy here, but you can't buy there and you can't go to another state, or maybe you can. It's all because we're still trying to maintain that difference, that line between the people who can use and the people who can't use. So we're still stuck with these two competing moralities. And that leads me to one of the most offensive things I've ever heard. I'm a patient, not a criminal. Now, this might ruffle some feathers, but that's something, as someone who is not a patient, you know, not qualified as a medical marijuana user, kind of gets under my skin. And it seems to be kind of a popular theme among some people. And I'm not saying people in here are saying that or believe that in any way, but it is a meme that has gone through society. There's somebody who's making t-shirts and selling them, making money on them. I'm not a criminal. I'm a patient. Legalize medical marijuana. I'm a patient, not a criminal. I'm a patient, not a criminal. Even NHCompassion.org, fighting for medical marijuana in New Hampshire, says, I'm a patient, not a criminal. Well, I'm not a patient, so therefore, I'm not a criminal. I'm an outlaw. I'm not a criminal. So, when we have this thought structure in mind of this difference between people who have the moral right to use it because they're disabled versus the people who are immoral for using it because they just like to get high, that presents a Venn diagram. I hope you like Venn diagrams. I'm a big fan. Where there's two groups of people. There's a group of people who use marijuana, and there's a group of people who are very sick and disabled, and that where they meet in the middle are the people who are too sick to arrest for using medical marijuana, which of course leaves the rest of the people in that pink circle, the people who are healthy enough to arrest for using marijuana. Odd sort of logical structure there. Of course, the normal view is that we have all sorts of people that use marijuana for medical purposes, for spiritual purposes, or for personal uses, and none of them should be arrested for using marijuana. So let's take a look at the trends in the legislation to see if this rings true. Is this thought meme, is this concept translating to the laws? And, of course, a quote from the late Dr. Todd McAree: cannabis has been categorized in contradictory and diverse ways subject to political context. Semantic characterizations are important in shaping institutional policy. Or shorter, words matter. So, how has medical marijuana gone so far? Well, on the one hand, it's been really great in that we've spread this message across to society and we've gotten the idea that, wait a minute, marijuana is a medicine. There are valid uses for it. People aren't necessarily evil if they're trying to use it. But on the other hand, there's been some backlash against this. For example, California is voting on legalization in November. So you could say, well, medical marijuana has led, after 14 years, to finally we're voting on legalization. But on the other hand, go corner Chris Goldstein and tell him how tough it was lobbying for medical marijuana in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania, and how oftentimes those legislators will say, well, we don't want it to turn out like California. We don't want to be like California. I mean, got the people in roller skates over there on Venice Beach handing out, you know, medical marijuana recs. We don't want that. On the one hand, South Dakota and Arizona are voting on medical marijuana initiatives this year. That's great. We're going to get, you know, a couple more states. In fact, we'll almost have Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah surrounded if we can just get Nebraska. I'm from Idaho. But there's very few initiative states left, right? Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah have initiative process, but I don't see that going very far very soon. And as we go farther east and south, they're all legislative states, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Also, at this point in time, at least 500,000 patients across the United States are protected from arrest at some level. That number might even be greater because, of course, California doesn't have a required registry. There's just estimates of how many Californians there are, but there's the states there. And in the blue bars, you can see how many medical marijuana patients there were by 2009. The red bars show you how many more we've had in the past year. So it's increased from a little less than 300,000 to almost 500,000 in just a year. So great, we're getting more and more people protected from arrest, almost 500,000 of them. So how come marijuana arrests keep going up? Since California passed Prop 2015 and 1996, there's been 9.7 million total arrests for marijuana in the United States. But there's 500,000 people who can't be arrested. So how are we getting more arrests? I mean, shouldn't it have flatlined at least? But no, it keeps going up. So let's talk about this concept of people who are healthy enough to imprison for using marijuana. What this does mentally in people's minds, and not ours, because we understand the plant, and we understand the science, and we know it's a beautiful thing, and we're all good people. But to the general public out there who don't know much about pot, or maybe they smoked a joint in college, this sets up this mindset with medical marijuana where there's this kind of a scale. You remember the Price is Right game, the range finder? Doot, 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 doot. What would the cost be? And they make it stop, and it hits the range. Well, here's how it's gone with medical marijuana. We've set up this suffering level where at the very bottom, you're using cannabis for enhancement. You're not suffering at all. You're just using it to be better, right? Yeah. Relaxation and creativity. All the way at the top, we have death. That's the most suffering you can get, right? You're dead, literally on your deathbed. And various gradations in between, terminal illness, lifelong debilitation, chronic conditions, mental illness, general pain, mental wellness. And I just kind of made this as a way to visualize it. It's not scientifically accurate, and it's not going to be perfect here, but this may give you an idea where the laws are going. We start with California, 1996. They set the bar really low. Boy, you can get medical marijuana card for just about any, for just about anything. Mental wellness, anxiety, depression. You can't really go in and say you want it for creativity, even though that's what you want it for. You have to say, you know, anxiety, depression, insomnia, whatever. But 2 years later, four more states took a look at that and went, oh, wow, that bar is way too low. Let's set that right here around chronic conditions. Pain and nausea. Oregon's added Alzheimer's agitation, so a little bit of mental illness. Alaska's still in there in the chronic conditions level. Hawaii's there around chronic conditions. By the time we get to 1999, Maine joins the fray, but it still kind of parks itself right there in the middle. By 2000, we get Nevada and Colorado. Nevada kind of parks itself a little above, you know, the middle. Colorado gets back down there, also about the middle. Chronic conditions. We're getting a pattern here where this is the bar. This is where it's set for, you know, how healthy you can be. If you're below that, you're healthy enough to imprison. We get to 2004, Vermont, Montana. Vermont doesn't go very far at all. Vermont doesn't have glaucoma in its law. That's just amazing to me. Montana goes down, it's a little bit farther, it's about in the middle. By the time we hit 2006, Rhode Island does a pretty good job getting their law passed, gets it down more toward the mental illness range. We get New Mexico, which we heard earlier has PTSD, probably gone farther than any state except California in the levels there. And Michigan ends up there in the middle somewhere. And, of course, New Jersey, the no garden state. It ends up right about there. In New Jersey, you pretty much have to be on your deathbed before you're going to get medical marijuana. And that's if the governor will let it happen after a year and a half. So I looked at that first level chart, and I went, let's take a deeper look at the medical marijuana laws. And I decided, let's compare medical marijuana to what I think legal would be. Now, I think legal, if there was a mature plant limit, I could grow plants in my yard. Let's say a dozen. Maybe more, maybe less, but a dozen sounds good. How much can I possess? How about a half pound? That would be good legal possession for me. Reasons? Because I feel like it. But in the medical marijuana laws, they have all these reasons. Cancer, HIV, AIDS, glaucoma, seizure, spasticity, pain, nausea, cachexia, Alzheimer's, PTSD, Hep C, Crohn's, arthritis, nail patella, ALS, hospice, or like California, any condition the doctor will recommend for. And as far as rights being protected, I should have all my rights and freedoms as a cannabis consumer. I shouldn't be restricted in any way. My job, my child custody, whether or not I can travel to another state, whether or not I can keep my licenses, and so on. So let's look at the existing medical marijuana laws. Plus, I've added in the three medical marijuana laws that were vetoed in Connecticut, New Hampshire, and the other one. So here we go. Minnesota, thank you. I knew it would come up as soon as I saw it. First of all, as we look down the states, the ones that have kind of a blue background, California, Washington, Oregon, those are the initiative states, so you can kind of get an idea whether it was better with an initiative or not. Looking at California, you get six plants, although I kind of made an extra bar for that because you really can have more than that if you've got the affirmative defense and the doctor says it's cool. Washington went with 15. Oregon started with three, raised it to six. The next three, four states left you at three. Colorado went up to six. I think that might have changed, though, recently. Vermont leaves you at two. 2, Montana 6, Rhode Island 12 an hour, that's good, New Mexico 4, Connecticut was only going to let you have 4 plants that were 4 foot tall. They're going to limit you to 4 4-foot tall plants. Don't you grow. Michigan's gives you 12. Minnesota was going to take away your right to grow at home. No home grow. New Hampshire was going to give you 3. And as we know, New Jersey, no home grow. D.C., no home grow. So when I look down that first column, I see plant limits getting less and less and less, except for Rhode Island and Michigan. When I look at possession limits, California, 8 ounces, but you can have more again if you have the doctor permission. Washington and Oregon have settled on 24 ounces, pound and a half. That's wonderful. But then as we go past that, look at the rest of them. 1 ounce, 2.5 ounces, 1 ounce, 3 ounce, 2 ounce, 2 ounce, 1 ounce, 2.5, 6, 6, 2.5, 2.5, 1, 2, 2. Less and less, more and more restrictive. The conditions covered, they're all a bunch of red blocks. I know they're hard to make out up on there. But less and less conditions, except again, New Mexico, that did pretty good, right? They brought some more conditions. But nothing like California on that top row that lets you have all those little red blocks. As we've gone on, more and more red blocks disappear. And rights that are protected. I put a registry system as that first column. I think a registry protects you from arrest somewhat. You know, the lawyers might have some stories about that. Whether or not you can buy your cannabis, those are the next column. Some states will let you buy it. Some states won't. Whether or not you're allowed to travel, and by that I mean reciprocity. Will they accept my medical marijuana card if I go to their state? Well, we got Maine and Montana, Rhode Island, and Michigan will accept the other state's cards. A couple things in there in the New Mexico or the Minnesota one, rights to work. Is my right to work protected? Is my right to a house protected? My, you know, under my landlord? They're kind of a half block tall because, yeah, they're protected, but they have a clause in them that says only if the employer doesn't suffer any federal consequences. Well, that's a big loophole for an employer that, you know, of course, it's federally illegal. So that's what we've got so far. And looking at this trend, I'm seeing things getting more and more restrictive. I don't see it going closer to legalization. I see it getting farther away. Now, let's look at the bills. Now, another, you know, the other side of this, you might say, well, Russ, we had 14 bills in all these other states, places like Mississippi and Alabama, that are looking at medical marijuana. Isn't that amazing? I say, yeah, that's great. Look at all these bills. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, all these states that went for bills for medical marijuana, they're all dead. They didn't make it out of committee. They're not going anywhere. Now, they're nice bills. I mean, look at some of those plant limits and some of those possession limits and more conditions being covered. It's good that we're asking for that, but we're not getting it. And look at the, you know, the other conditions, whether I'm not protected for transplants. Those are those pink columns on the far right. My engineer needs a kidney transplant. If they find out he's smoking pot, they'll kick him off the list, even though he's a registered patient. So we're starting to ask for those things, transplant rights, rights that in child custody that you get to keep your kids, it can't be used against you. But we're not getting these things. And then, of course, we got the election this year in South Dakota, Arizona. South Dakota is going to go for 6 plants, 1 ounce. Arizona, no home grow if you live 25 miles from a dispensary, within 25 miles of a dispensary. Because, and I asked about this at the DPA conference in New Mexico last year, I asked, why did you set it up so that if I live within 25 miles of a dispensary, I can't grow at home? The answer I got from their official representative is, well, it's so that the dispensaries will be viable and have customers. Yeah, because anybody who's ever gone into business selling weed, it's been really difficult, huh? Yeah, a lot of chance you're going to go out of business doing that. All right. And then, you know, other things here, the conditions, you know, again, more and more restrictive. All right, now that we've charted this and how restrictive it's gotten, how could the pendulum swing back on us? How could there be a backlash? And a couple quotes here, you, General Barry McCaffrey, remember this one? I think it's nonsense. This is mostly a Cheech and Chong show for the quasi-legalization of marijuana. And one of my favorites from TV's Judge Judy, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Now, the backlash has already begun in some circles with regard in the media, in popular consciousness, and somewhat with regard to medical marijuana. First of all, medical marijuana was sold with the whole idea of protecting the seriously ill and dying. But the states have had these huge growth in their patient numbers. This is just a few states that I picked out. Michigan, New Mexico, Montana, Colorado, Oregon. Blue represents how many patients they had as of 2009. Red indicates how many patients they have now, with the total being the top bar. So just in those five states that I picked out, it's been a huge growth in the patient rolls, and our opponents are using that. They're saying, you only, here in Oregon especially, they say, oh, you guys only said there'd only be 500 patients. My God, look at those patient registries. And the public is also noticing that a lot of people going into those dispensaries don't look that sick. Now, I know, you can't tell by vision whether someone has epilepsy or Crohn's disease or irritable bowel or a whole bunch of symptoms. But there is a don't pee on my leg aspect to this where the public's going, come on now. Come on now. Now, I don't agree with that, of course. But I have to argue with these people on the radio. I have to argue with these people in print. And this is what they're seeing. And we saw Michigan facing state raids. They don't know how that law is working out yet. Montana, they had firebombings of dispensaries. In California and Colorado, we're seeing new regulations to restrict and regulate and control how many dispensaries. LA's cut it down to what, 41, something like that they think are legal or could be legal? And Oregon officials here, as we're going for Measure 74 with the dispensaries, I've got quotes, two or three of them from different sources in the state where law enforcement and other people have said, well, you know, if they pass this dispensary thing, they really won't need to grow at home anymore, will they? They'll have a place to buy it. And are seeing that in some other states as well. As far as the Cheech and Chong medicine aspect, again, what would Karl Rove do? If Karl Rove went to California to any number of the seven events that I've been to this year that were called medical marijuana expos, medical marijuana cups, caregiver cups, whatever you want to call them, if Karl Rove went there, this is what he'd see. He'd say, see, get that focus, there we go. Most people don't enter raffles or use vending machines to get medicine. We've called it medicine, so that sets up in people's minds, we're talking about medicine, and then they, oh, here we go, spin the wheel for a free lighter or a $25 eighth, or enter for free, take me home, granddaddy perp, or the medical marijuana vending machine. And that blows some people's minds. Most people don't gather in large groups to use their medicine. When's the last time you heard a whole bunch of diabetics getting together to, you know, use their, test their blood sugar or whatever? Yeah, obviously, I've said, you know, of course, they go to concerts, they go to movies, they're medicating in the bathroom, whatever. But when they see this at the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, where there's a Prop 215 area and a whole parking lot full of people smoking out in the sun, that doesn't look medical to people. Most people don't take ridiculously large doses of their medicine, like 12-foot vapor bags and quarter-pound joints. Now, I'm a big fan of 12-foot vapor bags and quarter-pound joints. I'm just telling you, nobody ever sees someone come out with, you know, a big pill and say, yeah, look at the size of this, Prozac, man. So it's starting to get that don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining aspect to it. Most medicines don't advertise by the price. But everywhere I went, I saw 45 eighths, $45 eighths, $45 for a 4-gram eighth, free gram to my first patients. You know, now I know big pharma pushes things like, you know, your doctor goes in and gets the free, you know, Viagra things and gives them to you. There is somewhat of an analog there, but still, this doesn't feel like medicine to the general public. And most medicines aren't sold through sex appeal. This is me with the 420 nurses. I'm a fan of sex appeal and 420 nurses, don't get me wrong, but this is not what people think of when they think of medicine. And the other danger we face is pharmaceuticalization. In that, you know, we've got the trials for Sativex and, you know, countries, Canada and Great Britain and all these other countries looking at a way, let's get all the good medical stuff that we can't fight the moral issue on, but let's take away that evil high. Let's take away that evil smoking. And make it a pill or a spray or an inhaler. And that's what's coming, folks. They're gonna figure out all these cannabinoids, the CBDs, the CBGs, the CBGBs, the cannabidabadoo. They're gonna figure it all out. They're gonna put it in a pill, they're gonna put it in a spray, and they're gonna barcode it, mark it up 1,000%. And the pharmaceuticalization resolves that moral conflict between suffering and prohibition. Remember our Venn diagram. People that use cannabis. People who are very sick and disabled, and remember that middle group that they're too sick to arrest? They're going to create a new group called people who use cannabinoid drugs, and they're going to move all those people right out of that area into that new spot, and then the people who use natural cannabis and get arrested for it are on their own. Don't think this is going to happen? Here in the state of Oregon, we had proposals, major proposals by a guy named Kevin Mannix to put up an initiative on the ballot to create a prescription Marinol program for all of the state's medical marijuana patients, paid for by the state. I don't think Kevin Mannix knows how much Marinol costs. Yeah. Now, there's the IGOTS mind syndrome. This is another thing that's happening. When we have medical marijuana, we have created two camps now, people that are very happy about what they've got with their rights, especially places like California with Prop 215. We've separated our most sympathetic stories from the arsenal of legalization, right? The guy in the wheelchair, the cancer patient, they've got their own issue now. I'm just a stoner now. We're not together anymore. Patients will fight legalization if they're frightened into believing it will curb their rights. We went forward with the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act in 2008, and the medical patient said, oh my God, it gets rid of all the laws. It gets rid of the medical marijuana law. We're like, yeah, and it replaces it with everybody can have it. So what's the problem? Oh, well, somehow they'll invalidate all the parts that get rid of the give you legalization, but they'll also get rid of medical, and then nobody will have it. What? But that was the argument we got, and it gets to the point where you have to write these initiatives now to say, it will not touch medical marijuana, we promise, or else you're going to hear that argument, because I've heard it a lot over at the stash when I'm writing. And it sets up cannabis that are built on the prohibition price structure fighting for the status quo. I direct you to Kush Magazine that has been laying around these tables. You'll find a copy laying around here. Kush Magazine, Northern California's premier cannabis lifestyle magazine. Say no to Prop 19. Full page ad from HopeNet. And this full page ad says, new laws for cannabis users, no compassion for the seriously ill. No medicating in the same building with your children, right? Because the definition of space could be the entire building. Or I guess the definition of space could be the cosmos, which means since there's kids in the cosmos, nobody will be able to smoke anywhere. Zero tolerance for medicating in public, even discreetly. More tax on your medical cannabis. A company that makes money selling marijuana is telling me I need to be a criminal for another 2 years. Thank you. And none of these medical marijuana laws got passed without almost everybody who's for legalization voting for them. But the way it's starting to look to me now, especially as I deal with more of these no on Prop 19 people, is I'm seeing that every legalizer will vote for medical, but not every patient's voting for legalization. That makes me mad because they're wanting me to go to jail. And this ends up painting some people in a medical corner. If you've been saying, I'm a patient, not a criminal, how can you then go forth and say, well, we think the criminal should have it too? You've kind of painted yourself into a corner with that statement. The people who said medical marijuana isn't a Trojan horse for legalization, how do you then go and say, well, yeah, we do want to legalize? First of all, I've always said if it was a Trojan horse, it was made of glass. Because you could see we were legalizing for some people. Those who said you need a doctor for permission to use cannabis. Folks, I don't need the permission of a king, a court, a cleric, or a clinician to use cannabis. But if you've said that, how do you then go forth and say, oh, the whole permission thing? Forget about that. Now everyone can have it. And those who dismiss the medical utility of the marijuana high or euphoria, you know, say, oh, we don't want people to get high or whatever. And then now we're going to let them get high, right? We can't have that. So that's the bad news part of the presentation. How do we turn this around? How do we frame our medical marijuana? Because we're not going to give up on medical marijuana, obviously. So how do we go forward with medical marijuana with an eye toward how we frame this toward legalization? Well, George Lakoff said, don't think of an elephant. What that means is don't use your opponent's frames in your own argument. Do not validate what they say about your stuff. You present it yourself. You define your terms. And, of course, Judge Young, marijuana in its natural form is one of the safest therapeutically active substances known to man. Here's how we do it. We have to frame it that only legalization truly protects patients. Only. Because, again, let's go back to the moral scales. We've got two moral goods right now. Alleviating suffering is a higher moral good than protecting society from cannabis users, and that's why we've got medical marijuana. But again, like I've demonstrated, it separates the two groups and makes it so that here's one group we can discriminate against, here's one we shouldn't. Here's how we change that frame. Make it that treating patients as second-class citizens is what we have with medical marijuana. They have special, they have to register with the state. How many Percocet patients have to register? Is that something that has to happen? I mean, so medical marijuana ends up treating patients as second-class citizens by creating these limits, and not, they can be fired from their jobs in a lot of these states, and they can lose their house, and they can lose their kids. So we need to point out that legalization means treating patients like everyone else. It means treating patients with all the rights that we all deserve. We also need to have a boogeyman, because whenever you're doing politics and rhetoric, there needs to be a good guy and there needs to be a bad guy. The good guy's legalization, the bad guy's prohibition, and we need to show how prohibition hurts patients. They still lose their jobs, housing, child custody, organ transplants, gun rights, and more. Patients become victims of home invasions if they're growing medical marijuana because it's so expensive, because healthy people will pay a lot of money for it. Patients become victims of price gouging if they shop at dispensaries. Patients can only use cannabis as a last resort instead of being the first choice, the safest choice they should try. And a patient's always considered guilty until proven patient. So let's embrace legalization in our fight for medical marijuana. Let's say when they come at us with the Trojan horse, we say, no, it's trial legalization. Let's legalize it for the sick and the disabled. Compassion dictates we must do that. Then we should evaluate what happens when we legalized it for some people, and when that turned out to be a good thing, we should further legalize. If they come at us with the whole abuse thing, like, oh, there's so the patient rolls are growing so much, we don't paint it as abuse, we paint it as eager to comply. Look at all these people. I always point it out like this, right? You're telling me that a guy who just wants to smoke pot because he likes to, who goes to a doctor and convinces that doctor he has some sort of condition somehow, and then goes to the state and pays $100 to register and tells you his address and then tells you where he's going to be growing his marijuana, that's abuse? That sounds like eager to be legal, eager to comply, eager to jump through any hoop it takes to not go to jail. And that's what we should be painting this as, is that people want to be legal, we want regulation, and that's what medical marijuana has done so far. It needs to go farther. And think of it not as a medicine, but as an herbal supplement. Lanny Swerdlow is a guy that I interview on the show quite a bit who talks about it shouldn't be just for feeling good, it should be for feeling better, that we should be able to use this to improve our lives, not just to recover from the symptoms or the diseases that we suffer from. And finally, fight the pharmaceuticalization. Let's highlight vaporization, capsules, and tinctures. Madeline Martinez's mom was, you know, a person who really can use medical marijuana, totally turned off by the smoking angle, gave her a little capsule of what we call greenies, which is kind of a processed kief thing that's been baked and so on. She was fine with that. It was the smoking that threw her off. Demonize the high drug costs and big pharma. Point out that if we keep going toward medicalization, the Sativex, the Marinol, all we're going to get is high prices and more control by big pharma. Emphasize the self-sufficiency and safety of medical marijuana and of marijuana in general. And co-opt those proofs of cannabinoid pharmaceuticals. You know, if they come out with some study that says, oh, Sativex does this and that and the other thing, and it's so great. Say, yeah, and the real thing's better. And I always like to compare it to willow bark and aspirin. Why did we make aspirin? Because it's a pain in the ass to carry around willow bark. But you could use willow bark. Nobody would throw you in jail for using willow bark. Let's use that with marijuana, too. Let's say, why go to the trouble of making a pill for it when people can grow it themselves? And point out the hypocrisy of marijuana and Marinol, that somehow when a drug gets more concentrated, it's less illegal. Huh? That's got to be the only drug that's true for. So, in conclusion, the only tired I was tired of giving in. Rosa Parks and Jack Herer, you live 2 years longer than people that don't smoke and drink, and 8 to 24 years later than people that do. You got to be out of your mind to not smoke dope. It's not if we fight for medical marijuana, it's how we fight for medical marijuana. Thank you.
All right, that's the presentation, The Box Canyon, from our Normal National Conference. Took place on Saturday. We were the second to last presentations to go on Saturday. I was there. Steph Shearer was there from Americans for Safe Access, who followed up my speech. I don't think she liked my speech. But that's okay. It's all about dialogue. It's all about getting the different personalities and the different points of view out there. I hope you learned a lot from it. I just recorded that on Stick'Em, so it should be available at our live.normal.org website. So you can watch that video anytime you like. Also, I believe there will be a way you can embed that video with that PowerPoint presentation on your own website. Cross my fingers here. I think that's the way Stick'Em works. Anyway, for Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in to Normal Show Live, the podcast, the daily audio stash. Coming up next, hour two, we're going to talk a little bit about Normal Conference, get Ganja John's thoughts on the matter, and take your phone calls at 971-533-7111. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.